Has eugenics faded away with time, or has the pseudoscience morphed and cloaked itself under new auspices? Were some of the original founders of population control efforts themselves eugenicists? How and when did eugenicists shift from Dalton-era ideas to Malthusian population control? While there are examples of eugenics still in practice in its pre-World War II form, eugenicists were forced to scale back rhetoric and reframe their ideas in the post-World War II world. Adolf Hitler's tyrannical actions embarrassed eugenicists in America enough for them to at least publicly change their ideas. Eugenicists who still held on to the discredited principles of eugenics now attach these ideas to environmentalism and population control in an attempt to carry on eugenics in a more veiled form. Malthusian population control was now emphasized. Several prominent families are responsible for funding and promoting eugenics in America, namely the Rockefeller, Carnegie, Harriman, and Osborne families. Two families, the Rockefellers and the Osbornes, are particularly significant. John D. Rockefeller Sr. contributed a large amount of money to build the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in the early 1900s, which housed the Eugenics Records Office from 1910 to 1944. Rockefeller influence also spread overseas to Germany, where the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Psychiatry and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Eugenics, Anthropology, and Human Heredity resided. Much of the money used to run these facilities came directly from Rockefeller. These institutes became centers for Nazi eugenics programs during the reign of Adolf Hitler. In 1932, the Third International Eugenics Conference was held in New York City. The conference was hosted by Henry Fairfield Osborne. It was during this conference that an honored guest from Germany attended. Ernst Rudin was elected by the conference attendees as president of the International Federation of Eugenics Organizations. Rudin went on to craft the policies that governed Adolf Hitler's genocide programs at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Frederick Henry Osborne, the cousin of Henry Fairfield Osborne, praised the Nazis' eugenics programs as a vital experiment. Osborne wrote in 1937, "The German sterilization program is apparently an excellent one, although it is generally doubted whether equal or better results might not have been obtained by a voluntary rather than compulsory system. Taken altogether, recent developments in Germany constitute perhaps the most important experiment which has ever been tried." The influence of the Rockefeller family continued in 1945 when John D. Rockefeller Jr. donated the land upon which the United Nations stands in New York City. With the founding of the United Nations, the Rockefeller family heralded a new beginning for eugenics under the guise of population control. New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani introduced the attending audience at a 1994 Business Council for the United Nations to a short documentary regarding Rockefeller's influence in the founding of the UN.
"To appreciate, preserve, and strengthen the achievements of the United Nations, to examine new challenges which require creative action, and most importantly, to chart a course for the future. In doing this, it is appropriate to reflect and to draw strength from the early history of the United Nations. The Rockefeller family embodied the idealism of those years."
John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s early backing of the League of Nations in the 1920s demonstrated the Rockefeller family's commitment to international peaceful cooperation. Grants promoting investigations into the narcotics trade and the traffic in women and children, and his endowment of a League of Nations library were evidence of his moral and financial support. While the League of Nations floundered and ultimately failed, its ideals lived on.
"At no time in history has there been a more important conference or a more necessary meeting than this one in San Francisco. You members of this conference are to be the architects of a better world. In your hands rests our future.
Out of the chaos of World War II had come a global brotherhood that carried within its legislative structure the seeds of world peace for the generations to come.
Nelson Rockefeller, a former member of the U.S. delegation to San Francisco, was appointed by New York City Mayor O'Dwyer to interest the U.N. in building on the 1939 World's Fair grounds in Flushing Meadow. When the U.N. rejected this proposal, the Rockefeller family considered offering part of their own estate, Ocantico, and adjoining properties for the headquarters site. No decision had been made when the U.N. convened in the fall of 1946. The Rockefeller family was more concerned than ever with bringing the U.N. to New York City. News accounts from the period convey the atmosphere.
As the weary delegates of 54 nations prepare to end their meeting, the world takes stock of recent weeks, highlighted by the beginnings of cooperation. Hopeful signs are the unanimously passed resolution on armaments reduction and atomic control. And there was big news in the last days as headlines told another story. The gift of a site by John D. Rockefeller Jr. for a permanent world capital in New York. Quickly accepted, the strip along Manhattan's East River is valued at $8.5 million. An ideal site for skyscraper headquarters, the six-block area extends from 42nd to 48th Street.
The Rockefeller family formally presented its gift to the UN in March of 1947.
The future of this country and the lives of our children and our children's children are interwoven with the success of the United Nations. In it lies the hope of the people of the world. My father considers it a privilege to have had a part in the development of its permanent home. I'm glad to hand you, Mr. Lee, my father's check.
Thank you, Mr. Rockefeller. Mr. Rockefeller, Mayor Dwyer, the United Nations extends its sincere thanks to you and to your father for this magnificent gift. We intend to go ahead and create on the East River side a dignified and appropriate headquarters for the United Nations, which will stand for generations to come as a great monument to peace and security. Your family can be proud of its contribution to this cause.
Thank you very much.
The Rockefeller gift changed the course of history and brought the United Nations to New York City.
In 1952, John D. Rockefeller III, the oldest son of John D. Rockefeller Jr., founded the Population Council. The Population Council's stated goal is to seek better understanding of the problems relating to population. The first president of the council was Frederick Henry Osborne, who was appointed by Rockefeller himself. Osborne was a prominent eugenicist who helped found the American Eugenics Society, which is now called the Society for the Study of Social Biology. Osborne headed the AES from 1946 to 1952, when he began to place greater emphasis on population control rather than eugenics, signaling the shift to post-World War II eugenicists. Osborne wrote in his 1968 book, The Future of Human Heredity, that eugenic goals are most likely to be attained under another name than eugenics. Before we examine recent examples of population reduction and control being carried out, there are other individuals who played an important role in this shift from eugenics to population control. Frederick Henry Osborne's nephew, Henry Fairfield Osborne, carried on the banner of population control. His 1948 book, Our Plundered Planet, covers many of the issues that environmentalists are concerned with today. Osborne states in the book that overpopulation will destroy the planet, and that drastic measures must be taken to curtail population growth. He takes a moment to reflect on the savage nature of his outline proposal, but states that it will have to be done. He writes, "Of course, as we all know, these are momentous days and many things can happen to check population growth, even including the devastating use of atomic bombs and a new war. It is difficult to adjust one's mind to the possibility that the present negotiations between nations could fail to prevent such a savage denial to the right to human existence, and that the problem of the pressure of increasing populations, perhaps the greatest problem facing humanity today, cannot be solved in a way that is consistent with humanity." Frank Nostein was one of the most prominent individuals who made the study of population an institutional practice. He was a member of the American Eugenics Society, the American Philosophical Society, and the Council on Foreign Relations. Nostein also served as president of John D. Rockefeller's Population Council after Frederick Osborne stepped down. He was also the first director of the United Nations Population Division from 1946 to 1948. In a 1969 paper written by Nostein titled, The Problem of Population Control, he outlines a strategy to depopulate target populations. Nostein admits that economic modernization would bring the birth rate down automatically. However, he goes on to state that more drastic measures must be taken because, in his opinion, this method would not be fast enough. He writes, Given existing preferences in family size, governments must go beyond voluntary family planning. To achieve zero rate of population growth, governments will have to do more than control, they will have to coerce. To impose more drastic changes on a large scale implies many risks, not least to the regime that undertakes them. The price for this type of population control may well be in the institution of a totalitarian regime. Guy Irving Birch, who wrote for Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger's Birth Control Review publication, also played a key role. Birch's 1947 book, Human Breeding and Survival, combines many of the ideas of both eugenics and population control. Birch states, It appears what the United Nations need to do is to recommend to all nations adoption of laws which will actually lead to the sterilization of all persons who are inadequate, either biologically or socially, and encourage the voluntary sterilization of normal persons who have had their share of children. David Rockefeller, the son of John D. Rockefeller Jr., is the current patriarch of the family. His avid support of population reduction and control programs was evident during a speech given in 1994 in New York City.
Ironically, however, the very innovations that are making possible dramatic improvements in human well-being are also creating new problems which raise the specter of an alarming and possibly catastrophic disaster to the biosphere we live in. And herein lies the dilemma that we all face. The negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems is becoming appallingly evident.
The prospect of eugenics under the guise of environmentalism was brought up by an informed audience member during a televised debate on global warming in the United Kingdom. Perhaps not surprisingly, the question was immediately shot down as being irrelevant.
There is a question right up the back there. We'll take that one first. At the very back.
Me?
Yes.
I'd like to take the debate into another question. I mean, we've been debating the science here. We've not debated anything in terms of the credibility of the environmentalist movement. The environmentalist movement was formed by Sir Julian Huxley, who was the founder of the Eugenics Society. The WWF and these other organisations are actually offspins from that Eugenics Society. Now, what Martin Durkin is saying, that this has huge implications for the developing countries. Is that the intention behind this whole environmentalist scam behind global warming swindle?
Look, I'll just quickly throw that one to Greg Bourne, since he is an environmentalist and a former businessman.
I think if I were to talk to my colleagues in Nepal, Bhutan, the Congo, those parts which are very, very poor, those colleagues in China, those parts, colleagues in India, who the world has moved on from that debate. This is a very, very sophisticated, understanding group of people who are passionately caring about people and the environment and the economy.
Population control by vaccination was suggested in Henry Kissinger's 1974 National Security Study Memorandum 200. The document cites injectable contraceptives for women as a possible method of population reduction and control. Depopulation, as stated in the document, should be pursued. Wherever a lessening of population pressures, can increase the prospects of such stability, population policy becomes relevant to resource supplies and to the economic interests of the United States.
This may be the most notorious document in the history of the United States, and I'll show you why. It's the National Security Study Memorandum 200. Kissinger Report, who was the director of the NSC and Secretary of State, submitted this document to Nixon in 74, I think, just a couple of years after that Rockefeller Commission report. Now, it's interesting, Kissinger was a protege of Rockefeller. He came up through the ranks and was assisted a great deal, so I'm told. It was declassified in 89, so it was top secret for several years. The focus was, again, population growth, but on the international scene. Their goals were to have a replacement fertility in developing countries in 1985, and replacement fertility in the lesser developed countries by 2000. So they're actually going to take their program to developed countries first, and then export it to the lesser developed countries. It doesn't make sense because they're more concerned, but I think my interpretation now, knowing what I'm going to tell you next, is I think they needed to be at home base, work out this place where they had control, rather than go to a foreign land and try to work out how they're going to, you know, instill propaganda to reduce population. Let's work in our home territory. We control the media. We control the healthcare system. That was probably what they were thinking. They identified target nations they were going to use. They wanted to enlist multinational organizations. Legalize abortion was key. Financial incentives, propaganda, and even coercion were to be used. Well, we have another obvious question. Yeah, there's national and global population control policies, no question. Have they been implemented? The first I heard about this organization was this article by Lisa Regan, and I talked to her on the phone when she wrote this. She was talking about vaccines, politics, and Mercury's, and she just tripped into the global scene by mentioning that one of these committee members, the IOM committee members, was a member of GAVI, this something called an organization called Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. Let's look at GAVI a little bit closer. Who are they? Their goals, it's an organization which has encompassed all of the international efforts for the last 50 years, 60 years plus, to immunize the world. Their goals are to vaccinate, and this is all they do. They don't provide cod liver oil. They don't provide water, sanitation, crop, you know. This is vaccines. This is what they do. They want to improve the health of the poorest 70s nations by vaccination, every aspect, development, implementation, and so forth. We're launched in 99 by Bill Gates with $750 million. They have over $5 billion committed. $4 billion commitment was just given this fall in September by several European nations. Their goal is $12 to $15 billion. So this isn't chump change. This is a serious organization. They want to give the usual vaccines to third world, some of the ones we don't get here, yellow fever and so forth, oral polio, which we no longer give. They're comprised of government agencies in both countries, so it's bilateral, developing governments and developed governments. NGOs, World Health Organization, UNICEF, World Bank, private organizations like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and industry, the vaccine manufacturers. Now, this list looks familiar. I've seen this somewhere before. Here's the NSSM statement. Here's who they said they were going to use 30 years ago to reduce population. World Bank, World Health, UNICEF, UN Population Fund, donor countries, private groups, etc. It's the same thing. Maybe a wild coincidence. Well, let's look at GAVI a little closer. They have supporting nations, and there's the list, USA, Canada, and the Anglo-European countries. It's an Anglo organization. And the recipient nations are, I would say, non-Anglo for the most part. And the money we're talking, Uganda, $92 million, Nigeria, $81 million. So there's some big money. And in fact, Nigeria, I will say, was number one on the list for NSSM. They were really concerned about growth in Nigeria leading Africa. So it doesn't surprise me that GAVI is vaccinating the heck out of Nigeria. Comparing the target lists, NSSM, their targets, for GAVI, their recipients, the list isn't identical, but this is 30 years apart. So it's similar. I think no one would argue it's a similar list of third world countries. Now, NSSM picked 13 nations. GAVI, they want them all, 74 nations. And how is NSM going to do it, and is this what GAVI's doing? That's a good question. quote, the U.S. also proposed to join with other developed nations in an international collaborative effort of research in human reproduction and fertility control, covering big medical and socioeconomic factors. The U.S. further offered to collaborate with other interested donor countries and organizations, and they list World Health, UN Population Fund, World Bank, UNICEF, to encourage further action by lesser developed country governments. So there we're going to do some research, science. The methods of NSSM, they wanted it to be inexpensive and safe. They wanted it to be perceived as safe, for sure. Non-physician, which means they wanted to implement this to huge populations and not enough doctors to do it. And vaccines are perfect for that. You don't have to be a physician in these countries to vaccinate.
In 1989, research was conducted by the National Institute of Immunology in New Delhi, India, on the use of carriers such as tetanus toxoid and diphtheria to bypass the human immune system and deliver the female hormone called human chorionic gonadotropin, or HCG. While the HCG hormone is required to maintain pregnancy, the injection of HCG-bound tetanus triggers an autoimmune response to the hormone, thus causing sterilization, or miscarriage if given during pregnancy. The research used 4 women as test subjects who had been surgically sterilized prior to the experiment. The research also found that if an alternate carrier such as diphtheria was used as a booster in combination with tetanus, the sterilization vaccine would be more effective. The Rockefeller Foundation and the Population Council are listed in the document as giving grants for the research. On November 4, 1996, the publication Vaccine Weekly carried an article detailing an investigation that was carried out by the Philippine Medical Association into the discovery of HCG in tetanus vaccine supplies. As reported, have women in the Philippines and possibly elsewhere surreptitiously been used as guinea pigs in an international anti-fertility campaign? A medical study in the Philippines suggested that may well be the case. A study conducted by the Philippine Medical Association on behalf of the Philippine Department of Health revealed that almost 20% of the tetanus vaccine sampled positive for the hormone human chorionic gonadotropin.
This was in a little editorial column in the same Lancet a few weeks earlier. The title of this article is A Well-Managed Controversial Population Policy. And they go on to say that there's this policy in Nigeria, they're trying to reduce population. They're running out of resources, they're growing too fast, yada, yada, yada. Last paragraph says this. During the recent national immunization campaign, vaccination for childhood diseases and tetanus toxoid for pregnant women, in some villages, women escaped and hid in the bushes thinking they were going to be given an injection to stop them from having children. What a coincidence. There are well-documented allegations of abuse with tetanus HCG in Nicaragua, Mexico, and the Philippines. So well documented, the Department of Health in the Philippines investigated this. They found that 20% of the vials they tested were positive for HCG. The World Health said, oh, it's just a contaminant. They found this out because they had a program for tetanus to pregnant women and young women, only girls, when 70% of the cases of tetanus are in men. It was a subject of a BBC film, a documentary. And I met Sister Mary Pilar Versosa, a wonderful woman. I met her in Chicago this year to hear the story. They gave it to young women, and the women had fouled up fertility cycles. They had vaginal bleeding, serious complications, abortions. And the vials she tested, independently of their medical society, three-fourths were contaminated.
Vaccination has become an often feared event across the third world. Fears of sterilization due to immunization are brushed aside as rumors by the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and others who administer the vaccines, despite documented evidence to the contrary. According to the Akha people of Thailand, pregnant women are denied ID cards for their children if they refuse to receive a tetanus vaccine. Women who receive the vaccine while pregnant have had violent miscarriages. Matthew McDaniel, a human rights activist who has been working with the Akha people, spoke with a local medical facility that administers the vaccines. McDaniel confronted the staff regarding the accounts of Akha being denied ID cards upon refusal of vaccination, but was met with denial.
That's
what she said. Pay attention to this. This woman just said that the reason she went to get the vaccine is what they all know. If you don't take the vaccine, if you won't let them vaccine you when you are pregnant, you will not get an ID card for your baby from Thailand.
ไม่ใช่ที่ของเราเราไม่มีที่นี่เราเลือกเลือกทำที่นี่วัคซีนทำที่นี่ถ้าเกิดไม่ทำทำที่นี่นะคะคุณจะใช้เอกสารจากของเราคือสมุดสีชมพูการจะให้เป็นคนไทยหรือไม่เป็นคนไทยมันจะอยู่ที่อำเภอค่ะอยู่เป็นสิทธิ์ของอำเภอไม่ใช่สิทธิ์ของอนามัยนะคะอยู่ทำวัคซีนที่นี่นะวัคซีนก็ทำวัคซีนทำที่นี่มันเป็นกระบวนการการฝากท้องไหมคะ คือถ้าเกิดคนท้องมาปุ๊บใช่ไหมคะเราต้องดูแลทุกอย่างให้เขาไหมคะถ้าเกิดเขาเกิดลูกออกมาตายหรือว่าแม่คนตายก็คือมันเป็นความผิดของเราไหมคะการแจ้งเกิดเนี่ยแจ้งเกิดคุณจะเป็นคนไทยหรือว่าเป็นคนไทยจะเกี่ยวกับอำเภอค่ะไม่เกี่ยวกับอนามัยเลยเลยที่เป็นคนอ้ากับไม่ชอบวัคซีนทำกันอะไรคนอ้าค่ะไม่ชอบวัคซีนไฮไบด์ไฮไหม
They tell us it'll make the babies good if we get the vaccine. I said, well, but that's not all the evidence there. The real issue is they're telling you if you don't want the vaccine, you can't refuse it, or you won't get an ID card for your baby. That's the issue, not whether or not the vaccine's good or bad. It's that you're not being given the choice. And they're all like trying to go around the subject because they don't want to admit that they are having something forced on them. Because why tweak your reality? Why have all this stuff pressed in on you and have to admit all the time that your life's a heck of a mess, that you have no say? You know, like she even said when I pointed to the injection spot, she said, that's not it. Well, that's exactly where it was at, but she's already like, I want to deny my reality. Nothing's happening to me. I'm just doing as I'm told. I'm on autopilot. And this is the denial that you get in your villages that have no rights. They're just all in denial mode all the time. And people come and do research and said, everybody's happy. And just walk away like, that's okay. She doesn't mind about the shot. And you say, well, she's not going to dare speak out about the shot because she don't have any say. She has no power, no security, so she didn't talk about it.
McDaniel also met with two Akah women who spoke about multiple miscarriages that took place after being vaccinated while pregnant.
You got too many. Oh, my dear.